Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this edition of Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style, coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River in Columbia. This is PPTS, presented as a service to the progressive community by the Coffee Party USA Radio Network. PPTS highlights the activities, activists, and activism of the progressive movement. Join our host and special guests as we discuss the most interesting and important topics of the day. If you have a cause, an issue, a campaign, or candidacy that you're actively engaged with, please feel free to give us a call at 646-929-2495 and share with us your question or comment. Join the show's co-host and producer, Progressive Patty, in our lively chat. Go to the bottom of this episode page, sign into the chat room, and let us know what you are doing about it. All opinions are welcome. For the Coffee Party USA and Progressive Politics Tennessee Style, welcome to today's show. Please make welcome our host and friend, the Tennessee Progressive.
Well, howdy, neighbor. Come on up. Let's head out on the porch. It's a balmy 68 degrees outside today. Let's see what happens. Coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River, I am. And for the next 2 hours, will be the Tennessee Progressive coming to you live, 5x5, wall to wall and coast to coast. This is Sunday, January 16th in the year 2014. Welcome to Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style. Well, today's show is going to be just a little bit different. We're going to sideways the topic that we're talking about, which is the war on the poor and the battle for governance. And we're beginning to see the states start their craziness, and we got a little bit of federal work to do. We're going to catch up on that as an example. Then we'll go around the horn and look at things topical and see what's going on that I can report on to you. Maybe we can have a conversation about if there's a topic that you'd like to talk about or an issue or a question that you have. You can call us at area code 646-929-2495. Again, that's 626-929-2495. If you'd like to ask a question or come on the air, just press 1. And our co-host will talk to you for a minute to find out what's going on, and then we'll talk. We have two rules on the show, whether you're in our live chat room, which you find at the bottom of the show page, or whether you choose to call in live at 646-929-2495. First one is play nice. Remember that you're in my house, and I'll show you respect and civility and gentility and all that. And you can choose not to, and then you'll get cut off the air. But that's Tennessee style for you. We like everybody to give us a reason not to. And the second rule is come prepared. And that means that if you have an opinion, just put a big box around it and say, I think, or this is my opinion, or in my humble opinion, or however you do it. If you'd like to present facts, come prepared, be able to back them up. We will. This is the springtime. It feels like it's the springtime today. Of course, it's the dead of winter, but We're going to take these sunshiny days, what few of them we get, and we're going to run with them just as hard as we can. The purpose of this show is to highlight the activities, the activists and activism of the progressive movement across America. And we are a member of the Coffee Party Network because we believe in dialogue. We believe in gentility and civility, and our members take a civility pledge. And it's just that we'll treat each other like we know them, you know, and we'll talk to them like we're talking to our grandmother's preacher. And that's one of the reasons why we're proud to be on the Coffee Network, but we're also proud to be here because of the work that the Coffee Party is doing. And we support, endorse, and encourage such behavior. And we invite you to go to the Coffee Party Network's homepage, which I'm going to put up in our chat room right now. Check it out. Find out what some of our positions are and some of the things that are going on. You can also find our radio schedule there. And for those of you who can remember, boy, I think that's right. We'll try it and see. It's coffeepartyusa.com. Yeah. And you'll come into our homepage where you see something that says, Wake Up and Stand Up. And then there's a really good article in there by Gregory Sack on what it means to be an active citizen. And, of course, you know, because of who I am, I tend to come at everything from the view of the citizen. So I really recommend that blog entry to you. It starts out with a quote that says, the most important political office in the nation is that of the public citizen. And we sometimes misunderstand exactly what that means, but that's okay. And you'll see some things on there that we'll be talking about today as well. There's a blog that comes up on the state. You can look at the radio schedule. You can donate. You can sign our Trans-Pacific Partnership petition, which, by the way, there's an update on. We'll talk about today. You can join us. I'm a member, and encourage you to be a member as well. You can pay as little as $25 a month and forward the progressive movement and the Coffee Party through the radio network. That's basically what we're paying for right now. Some ads that are coming up in preparation for the release of two documentaries that our executive director and our president are doing down in North Carolina. There's a place I'd like you to go to if you think about it. If you'd like to tell your American story, there's actually a place you can do it. It's called storyofamerica.org. And you can see some of the stories that have been written there. And I'll put that in the chat room as well. It's a really cool site. It's got some great stories on it. And it tells you about some of the reason that people are members of the Coffee Party, what they think the Coffee Party should be doing, how they think we're doing, and what they'd like to do to help. There's some really good stories on there that are inspirational stories of citizenship, selfless love, and the progress that's being made in some of the corners of the country regarding the things that we're doing. We are in 50 states, and there's an awful lot of people that are a part of us. We've got over 500,000 written-in members, I think. And we want to double that before November of 2014. So, you know, I don't necessarily, just so you can say that you heard it here first, we don't necessarily need you to agree with us. We just need you to be civil about it. And it's an interesting show today because I want to touch on some of the bases we've gone over before. Because, you know, we talk about the eight battlefields of the war on the poor. We've talked about four of them now, and I don't want to lose sight of any of them. Of course, Tennessee's been in the news lately this week. We'll talk about that in a minute. And Patty says the coffee part of USA almost scares her, and she's part of it. It's a big bunch. They get things done. Senator Sanders did an interesting thing this week regarding the cut to the pensions of veterans, and showed us how we could get some things accomplished if we really wanted to. We'll talk about that some. And that's one of the things we're here to do, is to inform you and let you know what's going on. The Trans-Pacific Partnership petition we have 435 signatures. Our first goal is to 500 to sign a petition that says, should the Coffee Party USA take a position demanding transparency of the Trans-Pacific Partnership? If you think we should, please sign this petition and share it with your friends. If we're to take action, we'll need to take it soon. We'd like to have a whole lot of signatures on here. We've got a few. I signed it, and it's a pretty nefarious little deal. There's been some action on the Trans-Pacific Partnership in the past week, and that was that Congress, by a majority vote, voted not to fast-track it, which is one of the things that we wanted to make sure happened. Whatever that partnership becomes on paper, it's going to go through a committee in Congress before it's agreed to, and I feel relatively certain at the time they go through it, they're going to toss it out. And there are some reasons for that, like, you know, lack of privacy, lack of any kind of job security or benefits or protections for workers. I mean, even less than, it would not only kill labor unions, it would also kill right to work laws. Because those would be United States only, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, every signatory must agree to every line in it. And they would be run by a three-member tribunal from someplace else. And that's why the unions are against it. And I think it's a reasonable reason, because there's no safety protections or minimum hours or any kind of, you know, benefits at all that are included, because one of the things we forget is this is one of the few countries that does have workers' benefits, and we've been fighting for them since the beginning of the 20th century, and they've been rather successful on the other side of feeling that it's more important to not have a minimum wage and not have those expensive things like, you know, health insurance, which also made the news this week again. Not only have many more people signed on to the Affordable Care Act, been loving it, by the way, but the Republican press made a mess of it by reporting it inaccurately again. We're going to talk about that today. The thing that got reported was the CBO release of a report on it, and they didn't report it well or accurately. And we're figuring to talk about some things like taxing capital gains as well as you do wages. Mitt thinks Americans have lost the confidence they had in President Obama. I don't particularly care too much about what Mr. Romney thinks. But he's trying to make a comeback. And uh, there's some attempts to make criminalization of the doctor-patient relationship by those who are opposing abortion. And the dignity of work is talked about by Dante Atkins in an article that deals with Obamacare and the inheritance tax. And looks like Governor Bobby Jindal is out of the limelight for the Republican Party. The anti-climate, anti-weather, anti-everything governor, ultra-conservative governor of the state of Louisiana, who's done, like Texas, an awful lot to hurt his own people. And well, the reason I say that is because he's hurt an awful lot of people. I'm sitting here looking at an article that says, son of his father of his son, husband of his wife, four guys named Bob. So we might get into that a little bit. And I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines and talk to a caller at 620 area code, if that's all right. Hello, caller. You're on the air with Tennessee Progressive. How are you today?
Okay, you got 620 away before I put down my mic.
I'm sorry. Okay. Hello, Jack.
Yeah,
how you doing?
Fine. I'm fine. I'm fine now. I got it on.
Good.
You hear me?
I do.
Okay. I don't know what we're talking about, climate change or what.
It's your topic.
I just got what? Oh, my topic?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think the problem we have with getting along in Congress is semantics, because the idea of power that has not been discussed on the negative side of power is what goes on. It goes on because with what's happened in Florida with this guy, Michael, whoever his name is, Michael Dunn. Yeah, up to the cumulative violence, up to what's happening in Congress, and I think that most of the Tea Party some of the Republican leadership, and you know, there may be a few Democrats involved too. They want to show power, and power in most cases is negative, except when except in the case of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Now, he was the most powerful person in the world around World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he showed a positive side of power, which got everybody enlisted in a war effort, among other things, and solved a lot of problems. Prior to that, 1937, let's say, Social Security, and he introduced Social Security, and he introduced solving the world's economic problems with the CCC and the
WPA.
WPA and the PWA and the, that's what you need. You need a Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Well, you know,
we don't
Mr.
have
Roosevelt,
anybody in sight. What?
Mr. Roosevelt what? Did not have an easy trek of it. And there
I
are
know.
Still people living today who despise the man and everything
okay,
that
so
he did.
They, so they did. There are reactionaries.
The Tea Party is trying so hard to do is to turn back the dial to about the 1880s. And one of the reasons they do that is so that they can undo everything that Mr. Roosevelt and administrations since him, both Republican and Democrat, have been able to accomplish on behalf of the American people.
And that goes for Eisenhower. He was a good Republican president.
I said Eisenhower was a great president, I thought. He was a bit of a stinker from time to time, but some of the things that we got as a result of Mr. Eisenhower's administration carried on in the, not much in the Kennedy administration, but certainly in the Johnson administration, was the beautification of America and the establishment of the military highway system, which became our interstate system.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're still talking about his farewell address when
That's
he talked
about the industrial complex.
Yeah.
And I got a number of solutions. That's what you think. Okay. First of all, you have to disregard the special interests. The people are going to have to stand up. They have their backbone regards their against the Tea Party, the Koch brothers, Governor Norquist, whoever is blocking the way to a sane, sensible country. And you need allies, and they need. I'm not a member of the Coffee Party, but I do follow the Coffee Party pretty close to that.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. I'm not a member yet, but once I get out of debt, which I'm out of, which one of the things that's affecting me is I live in a nursing home for about 2.5 months. Cost me over $7,000 and Medicare or Medicaid. I don't have Medicaid at my income. I live in Oklahoma, but my actual mailing address, I'm still officially a Kansas resident. So,
I mean, you don't get anything, right?
My income was too high, believe it or not.
Yeah, it doesn't take much.
It was north of $30,000.
Yeah. That puts you right up there in the middle of the middle class.
Not in the middle, the lower end of the middle class.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
What other solutions have you got? You got disregard special interests and gather allies?
Tax reform. I've been on that for a long time. And I think we have four brackets. It goes in a lot of details. You go, first of all, to get rid of all deductions, exemptions, CD&Es, credits, deductions and exemptions, and filing status, CDEF, I call it. The only exemption would be the first $10,000 of income. And that's up to $250,000. Or $200,000, actually.
Then what?
And you have a maximum at that level of 25% over $200,000, maximum tax.
That's individual tax?
That's individual tax, yeah. And the first First one starts at 5% between $10,000 and $50,000. The second would be 10% of all income between $50,000 and $100,000. And the third bracket would be 15% between $100,000 and $200,000. And everything over $200,000 would be 25%. And I'd say up to, say, a half a million.
In what?
And then 50% of all income, and that's the maximum rate, would be any income over a billion.
You said income. Do you mean assets,
yeah,
or do you mean...
Income,
you,
yeah.
Mean, okay.
Yeah, I mean, that. I mean,
what are you
going to
do about corporations?
And do away with carried interest. That's the first thing I'd drop.
What are you going to do with corporations?
Corporations would be everybody would do away with income that could corporations make overseas, tax that income overseas. At the rate of, say, 25% or so. But they're getting away with scot-free over zero deductions. They get away with zero income tax when they ship the damn jobs and all that income overseas. Like, Belize or whatever, who the hell?
Are you
Cayman Islands.
About...
What?
Okay. Oh, go ahead.
And as far as the military, they go ahead with doing away with nukes and armaments, try to get along better with Russia and China. Work together to reduce the threat of war. And we have trying to do it in the Middle East with Syria, especially, is a very strict deal. You get a little, you know, act a little firmer with and what they're doing with Iran is a good start. There's a threat of nuclear weapons. You do away with nuclear weapons and use the nukes for energy stuff.
And you think that Israel will release its nuclear weapon stockpile?
Yeah, they do away with the... and I especially would press on pre-K, try to educate kids to get along with each other, and especially sex education from the age of 3, which is my older grandson's age. And
now, why does he need to know about sexual education?
Free public school. What? And of course,
why does
immigration. What?
Why does your grandson need to know about sex education at the age of 3?
Because then they get along better. I think then there would be less to educate kids how to get along with each other and avoid sex before the age of 21 or something like that, until they get married. And I think that abortion stuff, that abortion crap that they're talking about, they're concerned about women's vaginas and all that crap. That is not necessary. Roe versus Wade, the state is the same the way that it is, and the Republicans are especially, they're focused on abortion prevention, and they're with the stop it. There wouldn't be a need for abortion.
What were you saying about immigration?
You get down to zero with education. Yeah. That's why he starts helping them get along with each other. It's all a matter of power, too. The way the men are raping the women, where rape is a thing of power and then to the negative power. It's a negative measure of power.
Well, I agree with you. I don't have a problem with your idea. I have a few questions about how to implement it, but what were you saying about immigration? I wanted to get through your list. We've got a little
immigration,
time.
Okay. Go ahead with it. And I don't see what the problem is. They were expelling 400,000 people a year. The Obama administration expelling 400,000 people a year, sending them back. And we start with the implemented, what was the Dream Act? There are kids.
So you're in favor of the Dream Act?
That came to United States at the age of, say, my grandson's age.
There was a
3 years old, and then they're expelling the parents of these kids, 3 to, say, 16 years old.
And you're not in favor of that?
I'm in favor. I'm not in favor. Well, if they're criminals, then they should be deported.
If they came here illegally, are they not criminals, Jack?
Well, if they came here illegally, okay. But
it sort of blows the family apart.
Pay a little fine, yeah, if they have to do that.
The conversation
and
that borders. I hear from those who disagree with me say that it's a difficult situation because you have parents who came here illegally for the purpose of work who paid sometimes hundreds or thousands of dollars several times to make it across the border and get to a place where they could work for less than minimum wage. Now, those people by definition are criminals. What we've said was that with anchor babies,
to solve that problem, they should pay minimum wage or living wage. Then you won't have, if they can't get a job, then they'd be discouraged from going to the United States illegally.
And that was Perry and
they can't get
Romney's
work. Yeah.
Solution. That was Perry and Romney's solution.
Yeah.
That's what Romney calls self-deportation. But you've got children who are in college. The California bar just admitted an illegal resident to the California bar because he graduated school and passed his bar exam.
Well, the kids, you don't.
Now, there was a petition on the care.gov site that bothered me a little bit. It was a petition of a middle-aged woman and her husband who were from Mexico who came here illegally, and they were on the deportation list, and they signed a petition not to be deported so that they could stay with their children.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a family matter, and it's a simply stated fact that the adult couple were illegal. They came here to work. While they were here, they had children. Their children have grown up and don't know any other country. And the parents haven't been in Mexico for 20 years. So what they wanted to do was to get a petition signed that would allow them to stay in the country for the sake of their children. And I had a problem with that, understanding both sides of it. The simple fact of the matter was those folks were not here legally. And I believe that there should be a way for them to earn their citizenship, not a
way to keep them getting
deported or a green card or a visa. They should have citizenship. There needs to be a reasonable path for them to receive that citizenship.
They want to make it 13 to 15 years to get the citizenship.
Or up to 20.
And I think 5 years, they should be able to do it in 5 years.
Okay, so I've got 9 things you want to have solutions for. I'll tell you what they are. You want to disregard a special interest in the Tea Party and go over Norquist and all those, and you want us to make allies inside and outside the country. You want us to deal with Medicare and Medicaid.
Rescue China,
Tax reform, four brackets, and eliminate all deductions except for CDs and F status. Then you gave us your 4 statuses. You want to do corporate overseas taxation. I got a question about that. You want to do something with the military. You want to bring them home from Afghanistan, destroy the nukes, and have diplomacy only with Russia and China and Syria and Iran like that. And you want to talk about education, everybody. You're making a bunch of noise there, Jack. Education from pre-K to sex ed 3 years old, so that they won't have sex until 21 or married. And then you want to talk about doing away with all this talk about these abortion people because of Roe v. Wade. And then you want to deal with immigration by instituting the DREAM Act. Is that pretty much it?
It's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Okay, well, you've given me a lot to talk about.
I haven't explained that to, because I've only been given a minute or less to debate on things and quick enough on my feet to be able to do that.
Well, that's okay. We're going to ask people to help you. And
you can
tell us whether you agree or not.
And as far as that goes, you're with the coffee party, I take it.
Mm-hmm.
We need a face-to-face discussion. I don't think that I'm not a technocrat. I forgot how to do emails.
You got a web camera?
No, I don't have a camera. I have a cell phone, which is straight talk.
I don't know
how to do that.
Okay. Well, thank you for the issues, Jack. I'm going to put you on hold now, but I'm going to talk about each of these issues that you've given me for today, okay? And then if anything pops in your mind, you can jump back on the line with us, okay?
You got other people? I mean, I want to...
Yes, sir. We do. Yeah, and I've got other issues to talk about. So I'll put you on hold, and
you stick
with us, okay? All right. Thank you, Jack.
Yeah.
Good to hear from you.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Now, I'm going to look in the chat room because there are some issues that are flying around there. And I'm going to tell you that we have some friends in the chat room, and it starts with I'm trying to find it. One says, please bring, Bob says, please bring income versus asset into an on-air conversation. We will. And I'm going to play the devil's advocate here for a little while because I want to address, the other side of the issue, okay? Jack is a friend of ours, a friend of the show, who calls us regularly, who lives in the panhandle of Oklahoma. And he's a good feller. Don't always agree with him, but he's thoughtful, and he can. Give us things to talk about. Now, these things that he's talking about, disregarding the special interest in the Tea Party and government and Grover Norquist, the other side of another side of that issue is that special interest and lobbies provide for presentation and representation of constituencies that would otherwise go ignored. And the Tea Party started much as a lot of progressives wanted. They had an issue. It was pretty much a single issue. The Tea Party stood for taxed enough already. Had to do with lowering the federal tax, which just so everybody knows, I mean, in case anybody's questioning, under the president that we have right now, the taxes have been lowered 29 times. I would say that they got at least that part listened to, but they got co-opted rather quickly by special interest groups and ultra-conservative fundamentalists and those who didn't want government to work at all, stretched over to those who didn't want government at all. And they feel like Americans have come to believe for the greater part that the government is the solution to every problem, and that it's grown so much in size that it's unsustainable. And then there are those who are further to the right of that that say, you know, it allows for people to have a life of gimme, the want-tos and the people who want to live off the government. Because they believe that welfare was a bad idea at the start, that there's no such thing or should be no such thing as a social safety net if you don't make it on your own. You shouldn't automatically expect the government and the taxpayers to take care of you. Grover Norquist is the guy who said, I want government the size that's most small. You can drag it into the bathroom. And then he said, and drown it in the bathtub. That's not smaller government. That's the elimination of government, which is exactly what Grover Norquist wants. First, he wanted to starve it to death with no new taxes, and then he wanted to eliminate every possibility of ever having a functional government again. He has his own reasons for doing that, and he makes a cogent statement when you ask him about it. However, it doesn't wash. It's not true. And I call Grover Norquist a liar. He's an illegitimate player because he will not tell you why it is he wants. And some of the ways that he would go about doing this are simply anarchistic. They very, very closely form to the most conservative of libertarian views. So having said that, that's one of the eight down. I want to bring Bob on, a friend of ours, to the show who's in our chat room, and talk with him for a minute. Good afternoon, Bob. This is the Tennessee Progressive. How are you, my friend?
I'm pretty good today. It's
good.
Not all that bad up here in Wisconsin.
Oh, well, that's probably the jet stream south of you now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, thank you, Loach. We appreciate you. God bless you.
Yeah, well, we figured you should enjoy the benefits of winter.
Yeah, Atlanta thanks you too. They've had a snowstorm for a while. What's on your mind today?
Well, ended up talking about online about the privilege of voting, and I don't know if jaundice is the right word, but there are so many uninformed, if not blatantly ignorant, voters. It would seem reasonable to put some prohibitions on who can vote.
Could we identify ignorant? Could we get some definition to ignorant?
Sure. Unaware of the policies that the individuals or issues they are voting on, what those consequences are. They go in and on the basis of purely emotional impressions that they get from media, they vote because this guy's blonde and that guy's black. He's not going to vote for the black guy because he's black. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with politics. It has to do with their racism. You know, the assumption there is, of course, that racism is not a legitimate reason to make a to vote a given way. But then again, this is America. We get to vote on anything for any bloody reason we care for. It doesn't have to be rational. It doesn't
right.
have to be reasonable. You know,
right.
it can be purely emotional, which is one of the reasons why the money in politics is so dangerous. I mean, advertising works. The reality is that they can sell anything. They can sell ice boxes to Eskimos.
There you go.
Okay? You know, I mean, so, you know, what do they want to sell? They want to sell this product. It may be a bad product. It might be a scheming, lying, horrid product, but they can sell it.
Let me
if
guess.
All they're doing is watching TV, then they'll vote for it.
Let me guess. You must live in Wisconsin.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, matter of fact.
You gotta. What do you do, however, when, in your case, you vote for A and get B, but the same guy's in office?
That's I know the feeling. Our governor's that way. We tried to get rid of him. It didn't work. And
you more than tried. Well, I haven't seen such an effort in my time. I think, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Let me just interrupt you this far. If
sure.
democracy survives in America, it's going to be because of Wisconsin. It's going to be because of Wisconsin in 2006 and 2008, 2010, 2012.
That's a pretty scary prospect living
yeah.
here and seeing how it's being manipulated by the money, by the Koch brothers and
yeah.
all of the other forces that are
yeah.
thrown in. I have a lot of faith in the integrity of the Wisconsin voter, resident. I think I should just say resident, not necessarily the voter.
Well, they did a pretty good job of voting. I mean, they pulled. I watched every precinct in Wisconsin in the last election, and the people voted, and Mr. Ryan couldn't win his own district, but he still won, and Mr. Walker
yeah.
couldn't win in Milwaukee County, and he still won.
Yeah,
and Milwaukee was supposed to be one of the most heavily gerrymandered district counties in the United States.
I wouldn't be
and
surprised. I mean,
he lost.
Let us make.
But he won the governorship. How does that happen?
By being a rural state.
Yeah.
The You're fact of
say
the matter
cross.
Is. Well. When you look at the state completely, and for that matter,
mm-hmm.
I need to confess that I am not that up on Wisconsin details of the politics, but the fact of the matter is there are more rural voting districts and areas than there are urban. And the reality is, and it always has been in Wisconsin from my understanding, that the rural vote, the farmer vote, if you will,
mm-hmm.
Has
agri-vote.
Always been strong. Always been strong. Agri-vote, right, okay.
Yeah.
It's always been very strong. And don't forget, Wisconsin has a dubious distinction of having provided the United States with Joe McCarthy. And
yeah, well,
you
know, we
know,
handled that too.
Yeah, we did.
It was a very expensive gambit. Yeah, it was a very expensive Right, but one man's belief in himself over anything else in the position of power can have immense impact.
Yeah,
and what has happened to the people of Wisconsin is the only place that I can, well, and I'm sitting, you must understand, in Tennessee. Okay, so
yeah.
at least understand that in this 84% majority super ultra conservative Republican state, I feel your pain. The simple fact of the matter is that the only place worse for democracy than Wisconsin right now, so far as I can tell, is Michigan.
Yeah,
and,
well, having from Michigan to Wisconsin, I'm familiar with the problem.
You know, you and Jack are going to start a fan club. I'm telling you, he moved from Kansas to Oklahoma thinking he'd have a better shot. And you moved from Michigan to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
that was 5 years ago. I mean, basically, I moved to be near my kids.
Yeah, but you were the one that was supposed to turn out the lights. where in Michigan were you?
South of Detroit, a little
south
city.
South of Detroit.
Yeah, called Wyandotte.
I know where Wyandotte, Michigan is.
Yeah, it's a nice little place.
Yeah.
It actually has its own power plant and water supply and... Very cool little place.
I saw an advertisement today on the TV before the show that was showing a city street, and I said, that's Kewaunee, Illinois. Sure enough, it was. I know Madison. I know Wisconsin top to bottom, east to west pretty well. But I even know where the Dells are, okay? I mean,
they're beautiful.
I can even tell you about Black River Falls, but I won't.
Wisconsin's got a lot to recommend it.
It certainly does, and it's got some wonderful people in it.
Yes, unfortunately, they're not in the majority.
That's true. A lot of people that I met in Wisconsin I thought were transplants from downtown Brooklyn, or the Bronx. did y'all get snow this year?
Yeah, but not all that much. We got mainly cold. That's my opinion.
That's
We've had one decent snowfall that competes with New York City, but that's sort of an oddity.
How far down are you?
More.
Do you know how far down you are?
In what?
In snowfall.
I mean, I don't. Weather is one of the safest things that everybody can talk about and nobody has to know or understand. So,
really?
It's my opinion. It's a prejudicial one, mind you, but the fact of the matter is it is safer to talk about snowfall than segregation in the city of Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah.
It is safer to talk about, you know, weather variations or highs and lows than the ongoing black-on-black crime that is occurring.
Mm-hmm.
It is safer to talk about weather than to recognize that one of the tightest nooses around the black community is the white suburbs of southeast Wisconsin. Weather is a safe topic, as everyone knows. I mean, you know, you can talk about the weather. You can't talk about religion. You can't talk about politics. But you can talk about the weather, and in these days of it bleeds, it leads, there are limits even to that, and when they want to do happy talk, they do happy talk around weather.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little, yes, I am anti-weather. I am also very concerned about climate change, which people obviously can't tell the difference between climate change and weather. There's an impossibly large difference.
What's the difference?
And the fact, for the purposes of the elucidation of those who aren't aware, weather is short-term. Short-term as in within a year. Climate is when you look from year to year to year, season to season to season. The issue
you're absolutely right. And you're absolutely right in the fact that I have no problem with ignorance, okay? Because ignorance has the capacity to learn. Ignorance has the capacity to learn. Stupidity knows and rejects it or ignores it. Okay.
Ignore, I'll buy.
When you say, if you put your hand on a burner, an ignorant person will say, oh, okay, I won't put my hand on a burner. They've learned.
When a stupid
person is told that, the first thing they do is put their hand on the burner and scream and say, why didn't you tell me? I did. You didn't tell me in a way I could understand, but now you know. Well, I'll do it again. Maybe I won't do that next time. That's stupid. Having the facts, not using them, that's different.
Patty made a comment on the chat room that said, do I think that weather is changing because of our climate? And very frankly, from what meteorologists say, that is the case in this particular case, because the climate change has caused the North Pole to be warmer than it has. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, the warmth of the North Pole has caused circulation of air masses to cause the jet stream to redirect itself further south. And in that redirection of the jet stream further south has dumped the snow on Atlanta and Georgia and all of that stuff.
The next thing you hear is it can't be weather, climate change. It's cold. We got snow. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that happens every year. Notice that it gets cold every year. Ignoring
sometimes
the fact that
there have been years here that it didn't.
Oh yeah, what and here.
I'd have to ask Patty, but I don't think we got snow all year last year.
Go ahead.
I'm listening.
Well, I was just thinking, I sort of amused myself the other day. I'm obviously involved in the climate change issue locally, part of the Citizens for Climate lobbying and, a bunch of other organizations that I'm doing what I can as an individual to join voices with other people. But I got a sticker on the car that says, I'm against global warming, which I purposely put on my car this winter, because here we are freezing our tails off, and here's this warning about global warming. And if people can't connect the fact that they're separate, well, that's their problem. It again goes back to this issue of willing ignorance, people who choose not to know, not to understand.
Some of the things are not being explained to people in terms they can understand either. It's not that we have to dumb down the conversation. It's that people, generally speaking, Tom, John, and Q Public, don't necessarily spend much of their time evaluating or reflecting on meteorology. And when you talk about the Greenland ice cap or the snowpack of the Himalayas or, how it's possible for the ocean level to rise 17 feet, they're not there. You have to figure out a way to communicate with them in ways that will get them there. And a lot of our communication is not doing that. It's assuming that if you don't know it, you don't care about it. There's a good number of people that are exactly in that spot. They don't know and they don't care. But there are a number of people who care very much, and that number is rising on a daily basis, especially if you live in, say, California.
Got a question.
Okay.
Do you think that the folks that don't know and don't care should be allowed to vote?
If they're citizens of the United States, yes.
So regardless of one's level of understanding or raw intelligence, their right to vote tops any other consideration, right? I mean, personally, I think that's the way it reads, and that we can have there's a bunch of unflattering terms I can put there for the ignorant people.
One of the things that we have to deal with.
There are prisoners, incarcerated individuals who I would rather have voting than the people who don't care and don't know.
I understand that, and I agree with you. But my conclusion is that we can't give up democracy. What we have to do is we have to retrain our citizens what it means to be citizen, and what citizenship is all about. And, you know, we say the vote. I would take you to the point of saying I would love to see informed voters. I would love, and I think, you know, there are many instances, especially as an example in Wisconsin, where people were informed, well informed, about what the candidates' positions were when Scott Walker first ran for governor. And they voted based upon what they knew of him and his opposition. And when he came into office within 24 hours, had turned tables and decided he was going to try to run a dictatorship, there was nobody there to defend against it because he had also brought a majority into the state house. And Alec was on board, and they were shipping model bills to the legislative floor that were being passed without citizen interaction or committee work or anything else. And before you know it, you had a big problem in Wisconsin because the guy you voted in, very few people could have expected what happened. Now, the other side of that is the guy that runs for office under the Tea Party or the Republican Party who says nothing about anything whatsoever, like, say, Eric Cantor, who is a blank screen coming onto the floor as the majority leader of the Congress, and then all of a sudden he turns like into a crazy man. He goes psychotic, well, like Walker did.
Can't we just simply blame that on him being a Texan? How's that for inciting words?
I think it has direct implication, but I'll be nice and civil because I know some Texans that I like a lot, and they're fighting to make a blue state out of that. I think they're going to be solid purple this time. I wanted them to be blue.
But I hope so.
I think they're going to be purple this time, and I think they'll be blue next time. I think Wendy Davis is going to win. I think there's an awful lot of good people in Texas. What's your solution to Scott Walker? You got one?
Well, he's got to be reelected. This year, as a matter of fact, isn't it?
I think
he's served his 4 years, and we've got a chance to get rid of him.
He hadn't served any time yet.
Right, you are. You're right. And as a matter of fact, with the grand jury's probes that are going forward, there might be able to be a way to put him away. Where he
perp walk him for a while. I was wondering, the last time I heard the John Doe was circling the wagons around the state house.
That's true. Again, I haven't heard of anything that has specifically nailed him, just a bunch of his associates.
Who are singing like $2 parakeets.
Actually, $2 parakeets don't sing that well. It's the more expensive ones that sing.
Yeah. The who was it? His chief of staff? What was that woman's name? Linda?
I have no idea. I don't remember names worth a damn.
She was the chief of staff or his executive assistant or something like that. She got the first deal, and she's been fluffing the pillows ever since. She did the deal. She's doing jail time.
Yep.
A lot of his associates, right up to his campaign manager, I guess, they're going all the way back to when he was executive in Milwaukee County.
That's right. That's the lady you were talking about. That's where she was the administrative assistant.
Yeah. And go ahead.
Have you heard? I did a little bit of searching while we were all talking with Jack and what have you, but I couldn't find anything. The rules in Australia, actually, as I understand it, and I can't find to document it.
You're correct.
As I understand it, voting is a requirement there.
It's mandatory for citizens of Australia to vote under their constitution.
Is that, how do you feel that would work here? Again, that would include an awful lot of ignorant people.
Well, there's a co-conspiracy there, and that is, in order to run for office, you have to be able to plainly and precisely print your platform, and your voters have access to it. When you say that I believe we should do away with taxation, it's written down on paper, and a voter can look at that and say, he's for removal of taxation. What does that do to my hospital benefit? In other words, there's offsets. They don't, if you choose not to be an informed voter, you don't lose the right or the requirement to vote as a citizen, because they think of it as a monarchical democracy. They think that everyone should vote. And it's not so much we're going to make you vote, it's that we expect our citizens to show up. I would love to see our citizens show up, but I wouldn't be in favor of mandatory voting, because that is the exercise of the franchise. And in this country, that's one of the differences between us and some other countries, not necessarily always in our best interest. But, you know, we're looking in our second hour of talking about McCutcheon. The McCutcheon case is currently before the Supreme Court. Well, we thought they were going to release it in June. My friends at Public Citizen tell me that they're probably going to release it the last of this month. And there are some things that we're asking people to do about that. But you want to talk about money in politics. If that thing is affirmed by the Supreme Court, it's wide open.
Yeah,
there's no limits.
I'm really concerned about our democracy surviving the money. I am very, very pessimistic about that, given the fact that, well, money can control thought through media, and we are a media-rich culture.
I think I figured a way around that. But I want to ask you a question first. And please excuse my rudeness, okay? How old are you?
Go ahead. Me? 71, as it turns out.
Okay. I'm 59.
How about you?
59.
Okay. 58. Well, mentally, I'm rather young, as you may have gathered.
Oh, yeah. The reason I asked you that is because I find myself from time to time wondering whether or not I will survive this difficulty, and how sad it would be for us all if I did not. If we cannot figure out some way to deal with some of these issues that are so important, and the reason I wrote Jack's down was because every single one of them I think is terribly important. And I don't think he missed on any topic.
No.
With the possible exception of money and politics, and I think that's where he wanted to go with special interest in the Tea Party and Grover Norquist. There is a paper out that has been written and was given in a TED Talk recently that talked about media and the duty to care. And he wants it to become a law, a federal law, that media must return to its prior existence as the Fourth Estate and declare itself to be an impartial reporter of news, to care about the truth, to care about the impact that negative or politicized or opinionated or biased reporting has as a damage upon the society, and to establish really nasty penalties if they don't. Now, we talk about the right to report. We talk about the right to have an opinion. The opinion was never left anywhere but on the opinion page when I was a kid. And you knew that there were people who had opinions, and there were opinions to be had. But when you looked on the front page, that's not where you found them. We have to embrace 21st century technology, but understand that those rules were in place for a reason. And it goes to bloggers, it goes to journalists, it goes to media outlets on the internet, it goes to cable channels, it goes to anybody who presents himself to the public as a public purveyor of information. And it's called the Media Duty to Care Act. Now, if they have a federal law, which is how, by the way, they're chartered and licensed to operate, that tells them they must. And if they don't, then the question rises, how would that affect the influence of pure money in politics? Because I will tell you, not naming a party, because it wouldn't be necessary, I can't think of any party that would want that to be the case. That is my greatest concern. When you're up against that kind of wall, the reason we get frustrated, Bob, with our citizens is because we believe they should be informed. But what do we do when their total information source is Fox News or MSNBC or the Milwaukee Journal, for heaven's sakes?
Or Journal Sentinel.
Yeah. have they started printing that in red ink yet? Yeah, I was in Madison for a few years. Sorry about that. There was this idea that you could take money and you know, everybody said it wouldn't necessarily have any deleterious effect on politics, quote Mr. Scalia. But now five justices have come out publicly and said we need to review Citizens United. I would like to believe that they're going to include that, go all the way back to that in their McCutcheon ruling when they overturned McCutcheon. But
right.
We have had enough experience, statistical, reportable experience, to know that, you know, one guy spent $100 million that he admits to.
Right.
One guy. Eight guys spent $650 million and got nothing for it at the federal level, but they bought 37 states, which is what they wanted to do. They funded ALEC. They funded the state network, the state politics networks 50 times. That's what the Koch brothers did. They're heavy in North Carolina, and they're throwing a $13 million ad campaign against a Democratic challenger for Congress in North Carolina starting this weekend, actually.
You know, we really need to examine and understand the fundamental legitimacy of the ALEC approach. I mean, from civics back in the 1950s, when it was still required as part of the high school curriculum, the idea is that if you want politics to work for you, you work your way up from the bottom, mm-hmm. from the municipalities to the counties to the state to the federal. And that's what they did. They recognized that why should they be sitting there trying to only influence the elections at the top in the federal level when if they had a little longer view of the situation, they could take over and have as a consequence of being successful at the state level through ALEC.
If they're effective at the state, they don't need the federal government.
It took them
40 years. The only problem that I've ever had with ALEC is the one I want them thrown under a jail for. It's not democracy. It's not democratic. Now, they've certainly gotten a strong organization to put forward their positions, okay? But when the Stand Your Ground law is sponsored as a model bill by the NRA and Walmart, and it goes to the floor for a vote without any citizen impact at all, without a meeting, without a committee, without anything at all, that the guy who was at the ALEC conference took their model bill, scrubbed it for their, usually, not always, scrubbed it for their identification and put his name on it, he needs to go to jail because that's fraud. That is, he didn't write that bill. He was handed that bill and told to pass it.
But he didn't get, I mean, but that's been done since the beginning, as soon as lobbying took any hold whatsoever. I mean,
well, the problem, okay, if we agree that that's the case, and I'm not sure that I can agree with that, because at least lobbyists used a revolving door. They didn't try to get on the floor in the middle of a session. They waited until the guy retired and then put him back on the floor as a lobbyist. But they have a right to an opinion, but they can't obstruct the system to avoid a conversation, which is exactly what they did. And within 3 years, Walmart was the world's largest retailer of ammunition and long guns because of Stand Your Ground law that they passed. Now there's this Don't Say Gay bill thing that they're passing. They've presented it in Tennessee and Indiana. And I know the list. There's 27 states where ALEC initiates its proven laboratory model bills. Now, Tennessee is ALEC's model lab, okay? And Tennessee is usually the first to come out with the legislation that is a model legislative bill that we can prove. And this stuff about protection of rights against speech, it says you can't be held liable for speech or physical violence if you're performing that speech or physical violence out of a personal, political, or religious belief.
Well,
that
sounds pretty close to... Isn't that just what Goldwater said? Extremism in the defense of liberty is not a vice?
Right. You can say that, except it's not liberty you're talking about. It's prejudice. What they're doing is they're making it possible to legalize bigotry and prejudice. Okay? They're taking
Absolutely.
The social contract. They're taking the social contract and... The simple fact of the matter is that's not the way we operate in this country. Okay? We have always said that we are a rule of law and not of man. And ALEC has worked very hard in a nefarious, illegal, conspiratorial way not to have a conversation but to force its views down our throat. And they paid
well,
tons
like
of money.
I'm going to call you out.
Okay.
That doesn't sound terribly... Civil?
Yeah, it doesn't.
You are expressing I think you're right, mind you, but to sit there and call a spade is impolitic at times. Frighteningly enough, I believe that our country, because of its values, primarily commercial material ones, is terribly prone to might makes right and dollars makes might.
And so what we do here, or what I do in my work anyway, yes, sometimes I have to call a spade a spade. I've been working with groups and found out about things that, you know, ALEC believes and does on a regular basis that make my stomach turn.
Here.
That not only that, I think more than anything else, and I will presage this with this. With me, it's personal, and with me, it is so anti-democracy that when I say their purpose is to remove democracy from the American landscape, it is exactly what I mean.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I believe democracy fundamentally. We're fundamentally under assault.
Absolutely.
By our commercialism, by our materialistic values. We do not have we do not believe as a culture any longer, in my opinion, broadly enough, in the legitimacy of democracy. And the fact is, in the void of not believing in democracy, we are allowing ourselves to be taken over by commercial interests. And that's,
well, my definition, Bob, is that the goal of those who want to do away with democracy is to establish a plutocratic corporatist theocracy. Now, I get that from them. And the thing that what I was going to say is the thing that makes it so personal for me is the casual arrogance that goes along with it. If we're going to do this, there's nothing you can do about it, so lay down and die. Go away.
Okay. That sounds
and,
right.
And that's Alec. In fact, if you don't, we're going to make sure that you go home from wherever you are, from the courthouse to the state house, through the halls of Congress, all the way to the White House. And that's why I say that so often. I always try to say at least once every show, the closer to your doorbell politics happens, the greater the impact it will have on your life. And there's no person more powerful in the United States of America than your mayor. And Alec learned that lesson. They know it well.
Yeah.
They've got a deep bench.
They're easily corrupted at the local level. They don't have as much money.
When you spend $100 million on a weekend ad campaign in a state, that's every available ad space on every media format you've got, okay? What we don't have is an informed citizenry. And one of the things that we don't have in that uninformed citizenry is citizenship education. And there's four generations of people, Bob, who have no idea what it means to have a civics lesson.
You're kidding.
No. They did away with civics 2 years after I took it in the ninth grade in 1971.
Okay, I knew
it was taken out of
the
schools.
But I didn't know it was that long.
And we've got children's children's children who have no affiliation or allegiance or sense of ownership in this country. And that's, you know, flag waving ain't always a bad idea. Sometimes they take it out of context and do bad things with it, but a seasoned, informed citizen knows that. And they are as angered by it as I as a military veteran am. You know, we have to come together and talk. That's what the coffee party is trying desperately to do all across the country. We're trying to get people to talk in terms and discover again that we don't have to be afraid to talk to each other. I say
I'm
on a regular
like
basis,
that.
That's the biggest victim of democracy's battle in the last 20, 30, 40 years. We have lived under a fear society long before 9/11, but after 9/11, George Bush just flipped the switch, and that was all done. You're either for us or against us, you know?
Absolutely.
And I resent that, and I resent the Democratic Congress that went along with him when he said it.
Absolutely. I used to work – I'm retired from media, video, actually,
mm-hmm.
And glad to be retired, frankly.
I'm glad you can.
It's important to understand that – there is the decision was made a long time ago by default that commercial interests would dominate public discourse, that broadcasting does not serve in the public interest, convenience, or necessity, and the idea that there is an expectation that there be any level of journalistic ethics is secondary to the commercial goal of making money for the operators.
Well, I think that started, if I can respond to that part of it, I think that started with the day that we bought the first belief that corporations could divorce the social contract and decide that they were going to sell this lie about their only reason for existence was profit to the shareholders. Now, we had yellow journalism in the 60s. My mom was a journalism professor, and I was a journalist from day one. I had to memorize the canon of ethics, the code of ethics for journalism, before I could write my first story. So I still use the canon of ethics. Yes, it does. It does to me.
Well, yeah, but you actually are trained as a journalist. These other people are reporters, people who are trying to be on camera.
They have those ethics as well. That's why the media duty to care law is of such interest to me, because it puts the journalism ethics, the code of ethics, right back up on the top of the wall. And
how do you feel that the chances of that are going to be? I mean, given the commercial interests that surround all communication media.
That's up to us. You know, I would say to Roger Ailes, I will not work for you. You cannot pay me enough money to work for you because I'm not willing to give up the only thing I truly own. And there are many people who cannot, do not, will not do that. The only reason Roger Ailes is allowed to perform oral intercourse on America is because we permit it. How's that? Diplomatic enough?
That was not bad. Not bad.
The reason that the internet is the wave of the future is because, first of all, there are so many people who are listening, but there are also people, bloggers such as myself, writers such as myself, journalists such as myself, communications directors such as myself, who stand up and say there is a limit and I will not lie. I will source my material 3 times. I will fact check it 5 times. I will get double and triple, you know, corroboration and all that. How old does that sound to you? I remember when we were first making, PAL and Beta. I worked for a video production company and, had to do, among other things, copywriting. And I was in, where was that? I was in Belize. We were shooting an underwater video. And the tourism director for the country of Belize said, da-da-da-da-da. And I said, that's not true. And he said, well, put it in there anyway. I said, sorry, no. I got in so much trouble from my director. I didn't put it in there. He didn't say it. And Jimmy Buffett walked away and said, good job, bud. And I said, that's fine. And I know you're going to be shocked by this, but we were not invited back to Belize. And you know what? We didn't care. We didn't care.
Nope.
The idea, it's not some kind of Superman moral high ground, okay? It's average. To tell me that the average American citizen is amoral is a fight that we're going to have, because I don't believe it. If I believed that, I would have no hope. And as a human being, we are not conditioned to cope without hope. One of the reasons that so many people are down and quiet today about each of these issues, I suspect, is because they feel hopeless. They have been afraid so long, they've forgotten how not to be. And they respond instinctively, reactionarily, ready, fire, aim stuff. And this stuff comes out of the media that just absolutely makes you turn your head and go, on live air, you said that? Well, of course they did, because it's going to take us 10 days and $10 million to walk back what it was they purposely lied about. That's why it was never supposed to happen in the first place. You know, America is broke. I think everybody will agree with that, with one small exception. It's a lie.
Right.
And when you hear somebody in a political party say, we've got to deal with deficit because America's broke, call them the liar that they are. And we've seen, you know, I call it having outbreaks of journalism. From time to time, somebody on one of the major channels somewhere will say, huh? Sorry, Mr. Cruz, you cannot say that the best thing you ever did was to shut down the government, and then on the other hand say, I didn't do anything to shut down the government, that was the Democrats. Which way is it, Mr. Cruz? Speaking of McCarthy, who is, among others, one of his idols, along with the guy that's running the Dominionist movement right now. And we have to find out where these people are coming from. You know, what is the motivation for your willingness to spend $10 million telling lies to the people of the state of North Carolina? Because I've seen their ads, and they're not true. They'll be effective. but they're not true. And that's because the average citizen voting in the state of North Carolina has come to expect the lie and to believe it because they said it on name reality.
TV, radio,
right. Whatever.
I saw it on the internet.
No. The last thing I read on the internet is if it's on the internet, it's truth, quoted by Abraham Lincoln. So the answer is, how do we get our message? You know, it's always been about framing, right? That's a term you're familiar with? Okay.
Yeah.
How do we get in front of the framing and create a truthful message? Because I will tell you, as a progressive, the reason I'm a progressive registered as a Democrat is because only as a Democrat can I say, bollocks. That's a lie. And not be thrown out of the party for it. But I want to
so
move
far.
People ahead. No, so far. I want to move people ahead. I want to move America ahead. I want people to understand that there is a deal of significance in understanding that a rising tide lifts all boats, not just yachts. And that 47% of the people of this country who vote Republican disagree with Republican platform, either in its entirety or in a significant part, including virtually all of its social platform. I'm one of the most conservative, physically conservative Democrats you'd ever meet. You know, I had people in Colorado House look at me like I was a wild man and say, do you remember what party you belong to? Yeah, I did. And it's a matter of understanding that the purpose of a representative democracy is to represent your electors.
No, it's not.
Somehow,
it's just to get reelected.
They got it turned around. You know, I never worried about reelection. I did in three terms. I never once worried about reelection. I worried about doing my job because every week I had to report to my constituents what I was doing, what was coming up, and what they would have me do about a particular issue. Because the one thing I gave up to run for office was my right to vote. What I thought didn't matter. And if I had a town hall meeting on Bill 173, which was the open adoption law in Colorado, and nobody showed up, then I had to vote my best wish. But if it didn't happen because I was in a particularly gnarly section of Aurora, Colorado, who didn't sit down and say nothing. They came to meetings because they were trained to, because they were informed citizens. They read the paper. They came to meetings. They didn't all live at the headquarters, okay? But they knew that there was somebody at that headquarters 8 to 5, 7 days a week that could tell them what the reality of a situation is. And if we do this, this happens. If we do this, this happens. If we don't do this, this happens. And, you know, we had to do that. I chose to do that because in Colorado, as an example, we have a citizen legislature that only meets for 172 days a year, maximum by constitution. That's even if the governor calls a special session. So we have
a case in Wisconsin.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. In fact, it's called the Madison Model, in case anybody wanted to know. And it's not talking about James.
Mm-hmm.
It's talking about county. But the reality is you and I would probably not agree 50% of the time.
I would hope not.
But we would quickly come to the 90% that we do agree on.
Yep.
And that's because I know what you think. I know how you feel. I understand. I may not agree with you, but I understand and empathize with the position that you hold. Now, if you understand and empathize with the position I hold, I hate to tell you this, sports fans, but we're already 90% there.
Yep.
Because you're willing to give up a little bit. I'm willing to give up a little bit. We'll take the 80%. We'll move forward, and we'll fight for the 20% the next time. That's how we move forward. But we have these artificial manipulation set before us in terms of they're evil, they're bad, they'll do this, they're going to take away our guns, they're going to steal your medicine, they're going to take away Social Security, da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's they're trying to make sure we don't talk together at all. And what the Progressive Party is doing is we're trying to create simply a platform whereby, if you want to, let's sit down and talk about it. I hate to tell people this, but that's actually biblical. You know, God says to one of his children, come, let us reason together. And I believe that our responsibility as citizens will solve your problem if we take that responsibility and obligation seriously, because whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or a conservative or a liberal or a communist or a socialist or, you know, a Green Party member or an atheist, a Baptist, a Catholic, doesn't matter, green people, purple people, just don't bring me none of them blue people. We can talk, and we don't have to, you know, it's a be disagreed without being disagreeable. And that's because we don't respect each other. We're all isolated. I don't leave the house. Most of that's because I can't, but we don't leave our children. We've compacted and siloed to the point that the only room we have in the silo is for us. And that includes our neighbors. That includes the people that we work and do commerce with. We go to school with. We go to church with. We just don't talk anymore. If we did, it wouldn't take very long before both your and my primary concern would be evaporated. Now, wait a minute. I know Bob. He's a good man. He's got some weird thoughts on politics, but he's a good man, and he's a reasoned man, and you need to sit down and listen to what he has to say, because he's got some pearls in there. You know, we're both asking the same question. How do we deal with tax reform? Do we agree that tax should be reformed? I say it should be. What do you say? That was a question for you.
Well, I'm sure we need tax reform. The question is how we get there.
Tax reform. Right, we agree. Yes. Let's sit down and talk about that. And I'll tell you what, I'll name three things, and you name three things, and let's talk about them and see if any of them make sense. If we could get to that point and do those things, could we agree that maybe that's moving us ahead a little bit? Maybe. Depends. Maybe we get so successful that we come up with three more things apiece and move us ahead that much further. The question is, could we get it passed? And you know that what you're going to offer my side of the table ain't going to see the light of day on the floor of Congress. And I know that if I bring it up, I'm going to get looked at silly and say it's dead on arrival. So, in my mind, the worst cases of people who have forgotten about democracy and what citizenship is the current Congress, who stands to be the worst ever. In the meantime, we now have 5 years of American citizens suffering because of the intransigence of a Congress who just wants to be right. And you've got a president who's willing to pull the bullet and pull the trigger on an executive order, and people are going through the roof screaming impeachment, but they don't talk about the 311 times that the previous president did it. That's not counting signing statements, which was the very first thing that went under the hook with this president, who said, I will never do a signing statement. And certainly has cut them down a way off. And that's why we can't talk. What good does it do? They're just going to do what they want to do anyway. Well,
I want to go back briefly.
Sure.
I came back and we were talking about Australian voting being mandatory. I multitasked while we were chatting, and I ran across something that shows me a number of countries that have enforced. There are 10 that have what they call compulsory voting. Argentina,
16,
Australia,
yeah.
Brazil, the Democratic Republic of Congo. How's that good? Is that going? Ecuador, Luxembourg, Nauru, Peru, Singapore, and Uruguay. Now, there are a bunch of folks that are not enforcing it, which include Belgium, Bolivia, Costa Rica, Dominican Republic, Egypt, Greece, Honduras, Lebanon, Libya, Mexico, Panama, Paraguay, Thailand, and Turkey. So they've got it, but it's not enforced. Bottom line, do you think we ought to enforce it?
No. I think that I come from a position of free agency. And I think that if someone, it would never come into my mind. I could not relate with anyone who would do this. You got to understand this. But if someone decided that they knew what was going on and they were not going to vote, I don't think they should be penalized. I think they should be stricken from the record, but I don't think they should be penalized.
So if you don't vote, you lose your franchise.
You vote to keep it. Voting is
and
keeping
how,
the franchise.
How,
not voting is eliminating the franchise.
How do you get back into voting if you've missed an election? Let's say you're hospitalized and
there
are
hundreds of thousands,
or what have you.
If not millions of American citizens who, even as we speak, are trying to figure that out. Because they have been summarily, without notice, warning, or intent, scrubbed from the voting records. And what happens when that happens is that your entire voting history is gone. You don't exist. You've never voted before. So the only thing you get is if you go through the steps and jump through the hoops to become both registered and qualified to vote, you get to vote in the next general election, which puts you back in the system, which means that you have a general election under your belt. You may now vote again at a federal election. That's going to surprise a lot of people. And that's why we talk on this show every week about making sure that you're both registered and qualified to vote, because hundreds of thousands of people in the state of Tennessee, for instance, were simply stricken from the voting rolls and didn't know it. It could be that the address that the Election Bureau had was the one they had when they first got the vote at the age of 21 or 18 or whichever it is. And over the years, they've moved to a different precinct. They've just transferred their record to a different precinct, but they're not actually qualified to vote because they haven't updated their voting record. And what Secretary of State of Tennessee did says, that's fine, take 330,000 of them off the rolls. That'll make the lines longer or shorter, as the case may be. And unfortunately, just as an aside, one of the people that they did that to was a sitting congressman who got told at his local precinct he was not qualified to vote because he didn't exist.
And a shocker.
It shocked him and his mother, who, you know, had voted with him every year since Christ was a corporal. And found out there was a scandal going on about how votes were determined, how voters were determined to be removed from the polls. And it cost the state of Tennessee, well, of course, one would suspect there was a reputation there to start with, worth saving. There wasn't, but there were a lot of heads that rolled over that. Unfortunately, the guy who commissioned it didn't, and that was the governor. But they did a special investigation, heads rolled, monies were paid, people were put back on. But that congressman did not get to vote for President Obama in 2012. And unfortunately, he happened to be a Democrat.
Yeah.
So guess what he did when he went back to the Hill?
I need to shut up. Okay, finally. But I did find one piece of information here.
Sure.
That with regards to the fines for Australia. It will either be a fine or a day in court. That's the penalty for not voting. And it becomes a $20 Australian dollar fine, about 18 bucks American. But that's the detail. I don't think that would be a bad idea. You know, if you don't vote, pay 20 bucks.
It would certainly fund the elections, wouldn't it?
Well, it would do something, that's for damn sure.
That would give us a strong signal for a public finance vote election.
The
most we've had since World War II was 46%. And that was a landslide.
Yep.
And the winner won with 26% of the vote. Way to go, Bill Clinton.
Patty says on the line that people would just pay it. And if that's if it's only going to cost them $20 not to vote, what a great idea. We don't have their ignorant vote, and we get the $20 to fund future elections. What a lovely idea.
That would be interesting. If we could overturn McCutcheon and get Citizens United out of the way,
that would be a great start.
I might be really in favor of looking at that. But I don't think you could. Well, in Kentucky, down in the part of Kentucky where I was raised, buying votes was like sometimes what they call sort of winky-winky frowned upon. We were the only ones that you could talk about. Southeastern Kentucky was the only place in the nation that could out Chicago. We didn't do the graveyards in a day. We did them in shifts. And brown paper bags with funny bottles in them and little wrapping papers look like money down the bottom of them from time to time.
Hey, you can get a drink. You can get a vote for a drink. That's been the long tradition.
Sure. How drunk you want to get? And how long is the polls open?
The question is going to be how soon before corporations will get votes based on how much what their capital investment
is.
Their contribution or probably their votes. That would make the most sense, I suppose.
A Texas state senator who last week said that a corporation should be able to have one vote for every dollar it contributes.
Yeah, you're kidding, really?
No, he was serious.
Oh, God.
He said, that's McCutcheon.
Oh, God.
And unfortunately, he's absolutely right. That is McCutcheon. But he wants McCutcheon affirmed. So I thank you for your time. I thank you for your input. And I thank you for your civility. I appreciate it. We talked about some pretty deep stuff. I'm really feeling for you guys up there because I know you got one coming. And it's another one for you. Find the Light Brigade. Spread your light over a bridge.
Yep.
Thank you for your time. We'll talk to you next time. All right?
Bye.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back for about another 20 minutes. This is the Progressive Politics Tennessee Style Sunday Show on the Coffee Party Network, USA. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hello, everyone. This is John Cashin with the Coffee Party USA's Civics Minute. There are many arguments proclaiming the evils of big government, and it always seems to come back to the same arguments made by the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists during the days of our founders concerning the differences between a strong central government and a weak central government. The Second Continental College adopted the Articles of Confederation on November 15, 1777, and it was in place until 1789. But it was replaced by the Constitution, which advocated for a stronger central government. Why was it replaced? The Articles of Confederation maintained the principle that the national government would not hold more power than the states, that which they saw as sovereign. This satisfied the fears that many of the states had regarding a strong central power, as Britain was before the Declaration of Independence. In fact, there was no executive branch, because they feared giving one man that much power, and it was decided that the Congress would handle all the nation's affairs. However, there were many inherent weaknesses with the Articles of Confederation. The national government did not have the power to tax. Congress did not have the power to force states to obey its laws. Congress could not enforce laws. Each state could issue its own paper money. Any state could put tariffs on trade between other states or countries. There was no system of national courts. Congress could declare war and raise an army, but it could not force the states to give men or money. After the Revolutionary War, the country went into a deep post-war depression. The states were threatening war with each other, and there were armed uprisings and riots across the land. Things eventually got so bad that the country was on the verge of a civil war. This was called the critical period. Because each state was printing their own money, the value depreciated soon after the war, and many returning soldiers were paid in currency they considered to be worthless. There are stories that some soldiers wallpapered their house with the paper currency. On May 25, 1787, the Continental Congress convened in Philadelphia to decide the fate of the Articles of Confederation, and on September 17, 1787, a new constitution was approved, which had the much-needed, stronger central powers. Stay tuned for more Civics Minute segments as you listen to your favorite Coffee Party USA Blog Talk radio shows.
I'm the Tennessee Progressive, coming to you with Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style. And we've got about 30 minutes left. I want to do some talking. I want to thank Jack for giving me a list that, incidentally, I'll tell you about in a minute. And I certainly want to thank Bob, two loyal supporters and fans of the show who are committed to the process and who are deeply engaged. I want you to become party members, and I want you to look at what the Coffee Party offers. If you see something that you agree with, get involved. If you see something missing, let me know. We'll get it started. The question comes from Jack's list. I didn't make this up. You all heard him. We said that there was a battle on the poor, a war on the poor, and there were eight battlefields. Jack, in his eight-item list, listed every single battlefield that we're going to talk about. I think that's rather amazing. Jack doesn't know what my list is because he hasn't seen it, and I certainly haven't shared it with him. But the eight battlefields that we're talking about are the eight items that he listed. We have slightly different names for them. For instance, the one we're looking at currently is the Battle for Governance. Governance. That's a citizen's word. You gotta have some sense of understanding what governance is in order to be able to have a conversation about it. And Bob was correct. I believe that citizens have an obligation to become informed voters. That's the obligation and responsibility of citizenship. The privilege is to vote. And if you vote without knowing, you know, It's like there have been times in elections when people were bullied and horsewhipped and their arms wrenched behind their back until they promised to vote straight ticket. We still have straight ticket voting. It's not as common as it is, but then it's because there's not as many people voting, although there are more people in the United States than ever before, with the most quickly growing population being those that are senior citizens. Actually, 2 years ago, the fastest growing population of voters in the United States were centenarians, and that was people 100 or over. I don't know if that's true this year. I think it's 60 or over. The question comes then in the war on governance, the battle for governance, it's not who's going to govern. It's how they're going to govern. They want you to be all impressed with who's going to govern, whether it be a red team or a blue team, but your obligation, in my view, as a citizen, is to understand how they would govern. And I think both those who have one opinion and the other opinion about the parties are being distracted. It's like, to me, those who are arguing pro-life versus pro-choice are both arguing distractions because that's not the issue. But what can we do about it? What can you do about it? Well, first, you can make absolutely certain that you are both registered and qualified to vote in the precinct where you currently live. If you are a college student or a high school student, make sure that you're able to vote where you are when the election comes. Make sure that you have all the qualifying documentation you need now. We went through this, we tend to go through it every year. Fortunately, more people are becoming registered to vote. And you need to understand that if you do not know that you are both registered and qualified to vote, the likelihood is that you're not. So if you're in Pennsylvania or North Carolina or Tennessee or Iowa or Wisconsin or Illinois or Oregon or Washington or California or Florida, that cover the country, Hawaii, Alaska, you need to find out by calling your local election commission. Every county in America has one. There's 95,000 of them. I got a database. That's the first thing you should do as a citizen of the United States. You should make sure that you are both registered and qualified to vote. If you enjoy the benefits and the privileges of citizenship, whether you know it or not, which is another sadness because most young voters have no idea what democracy brings to them. There are an awful lot of people who have never traveled outside the confines of the boundaries of the landmass called the lower 48. The next thing you can do is go to a place that I'm going to put in the chat room right now and do something about it. I'm going to try to anyway. I'm sorry, pardon my typing. I'm a slow typer. It's called moneyout-votersin.org. And that is a place where you can sign up to attend or create a local action within 12 blocks of where you live regarding the McCutcheon decision that's going to be determined by the Supreme Court sometime before the end of this session. And the agreement is you sign up to show up at a place at a given time for an hour the day of the Supreme Court decision. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to do anything. You can have a sign if you want to. You can have speechifying if you want to. You can have cakes and cookies and ice cream if you want to. You can have it, but it needs to be public. You can have it on your porch. You can have it in the county square. You can have it in your city hall. You can have it at your representative's office on the sidewalk. What we want is to see you there. And all that's going to say is, I'm a citizen and I'm aware. And if you go to moneyout-votersin.org, you can use your zip code to find out where there's a close place by you that on the day the McCutchen decision is announced, at some time certain, you will show up for an hour. And I swear to you, you don't have to say anything or do anything or wear a tie-dyed t-shirt or, you know, burn a bra or burn your draft card or any of that sort of stuff. All you have to do is stand together and talk to your neighbors. That's all you got to do for an hour. And in over, I think it's now up to 1,000 cities in America, it's going to happen. There are people with teams. You can go to moveon.org. You can go to change.org. You can go to Public Citizen, which is funding this group. And you can sign up to host an event within 12 blocks of where you live that says on the day that the Supreme Court comes out with a McCutchen decision at 6 p.m. or whatever time suits your need, I'm going to go to X place. In my town, it's the public square. And at a time certain, I and my community members who will do so are going to stand together and talk. That's all. You can get signs. They got signs they'll send you. You can make your own. I like homemade signs. But you don't have to. All that we want is a head count of those who are aware, who will say publicly by their presence, I'm here and I'm aware of what this means, regardless of the outcome. But be informed and be aware of what it means to be standing there. It means that you understand what the Supreme Court has said and some sense of ramifications of what that means. There are three ways they can go, and I believe they're trying to find an easy way out, or at least a usable way out, because Chief Justice Roberts is very aware of his legacy on this court, and right now it's just not too good. And it's not too good for him on the other side, because a lot of decisions are coming down in ways that he wouldn't necessarily prefer. So while there's a concern that he's going to vote his ideology, there will come a time when we have to admit that, at least as far as Justice Roberts is concerned, he hasn't always done that. There are those who do. We know who they are. And there are those who believe that McCutchen is going to be affirmed, which means that there's no limit on the amount of money that a corporation can give in an election cycle. Biennial election cycle, an individual can give up to $25.3 million per candidate per election cycle, which is every 2 years. As many candidates as they want, they can give that to. And that's what you're up against. What is it that's up against that? Speaking truth to power, showing up, being a citizen. We have seen consistently that when you speak truth to power, things change. In interest of that, there were 2.5 million signatories on a move-on petition that I signed that said, don't fast-track the TPP. Don't fast-track the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Look at it, because America stands to lose an awful lot. They worked. Congress voted not to fast-track TPT or the its two brethren. So if you're interested in knowing, there are a lot of people who are perfectly willing to give $25.3 million to a local seat race for a state house rep or a city council member, if that's what it takes to get them elected, because they want the agenda. As you go up in number and down in location, that's the wedge upon which they call impact has, okay? If I'm in a local meter reader race, for instance, and somebody offers me $1 million, I'm never going to ignore them. Does that equal influence? For some, it does. You can buy politicians all day long. You can't buy me, but you can buy somebody, you know. You may give $25.3 million to my campaign because you believe that what I stand for is what you agree with, and that's what you want to see. I can't say that just because you're voting on another side, that's not true for you. I'm just saying you shouldn't be allowed to do it. I do not believe that McCutcheon should be affirmed. I believe it will undo democracy in this time. And I believe that's exactly why there are those who are strongest behind it that are spending a lot of money trying to impress upon the Supreme Court that they need to do this for their shareholders. That's horse manure. But it is fact that we're talking about how we operate and govern our country. What do we as citizens decide we're going to settle for? Now, you need to know that those who believe that money should not be in politics and that money is not speech and that corporations are not people are more common than those who believe otherwise. Matter of fact, it's about 99 to 1 for people believing that money is not speech and corporations are not people. There is a very active bill on the floor of the House of Representatives right now and in the Senate that has several sponsors that say exactly that, and they're willing to make it an amendment. They could send it, they could ratify it to the states. I don't see the states ever doing it because we've got 37 supermajority Republican state houses that ALEC has paid for. And you tell me in a Democratic majority state that only 14.5% of the people don't have representation, I got a problem. There's got to be a reason. And we know what the reason is, and we're working on it, I promise. You have to be politically aware because your democracy stands or falls on it. The simple fact of the matter is, you know, we've never had a time in the United States of America when we've not had democracy. Democracy is messy, it's complicated, it's nerdy business. It just happens to be better than any form of government we've found. And that includes monarchy and anarchy and sociarchy and oligarchy and plutocracy and corporatocracy and meritocracy and all that other stuff. And it would really kill my soul if I realized one morning, woke up and found out that we had to fight to regain democracy. Because that's one of those things, if you look at France, once lost, you can never recover. And you can have your opinion about the Second Amendment or the First Amendment or the Fourth Amendment or the Ninth Amendment or the Fifth Amendment or the 14th Amendment or the 13th Amendment or the 17th Amendment or the 19th Amendment, as I have heard people say they'd like to do away with. The question is, when it all comes down to it at the end of the day, is that who America is? Is that what we want America to be? Do we want America to be an oligarchical, plutocratic theocracy? I don't. I've lived to defend democracy. I'm certainly willing to die to keep it. That won't happen. It'll be a quiet, silent takeover. And then you'll have the Dominionists in there deciding that we're going to have this religion. And, you know, I'm not being hypocritical. I'm being civil. But I am also being real. That's exactly what they want to do. They want to win Jesus. They want to win for Jesus. They want, and I'm an ordained minister, folks. I believe that there is a separation between church and state, and I believe that there's no business having religion in politics. I really don't. And when the Catholic Church says that we're going to, you know, excoriate you from now to the end of time because you've passed national health care law that permits women to have contraception, I'll say you're acting as a foreign dignitary. Get out of my politics. You know, I do know you have a country. And your cardinals and your bishops and your priests and all those people have a bit of a wobbly track record when it comes to being on the right side of issues. And we don't need you telling us how to run our country. There are people who have deeply held religious beliefs, and I respect that. Not in the dome of my capital. And it's really a lot better if it's not. As we're coming to find out, with all the pressure that's being put on particular institutions, people, and practices to which religion is being assigned when it has no business being there. I defy this on religious grounds. I'm going to bully this boy and beat him up on religious grounds. Not in Tennessee. You can try it, Mr. Camfield, but you got to understand, once again, Mr. Desjarlais, you are underestimating the will of the Tennessee people. We do believe in the right things. And while we have religious beliefs that we hold dear to our heart, we also have civic beliefs that you don't go around beating up on people because they're different than you. We believe that a rising tide lifts all boats. You don't. That's different. We'll passionately and deliberatively argue our side until not only are we heard, but you're removed because you don't represent your electeds. And you come out with your newsletters and your squeaky clean secret telephone calls every week, and you tell your highest donors what you're going to do as long as they give another trillion dollars. And all of a sudden, there's a new law in Tennessee that says, go for it. You spend $100 million defeating a union vote and crow about it. And crow about it in unpleasant terms, I might add. The people of Tennessee really are not interested in hearing you swell about how you bought an election to keep the unions out of the VW plant. The same way they don't really care a lot to hear you swell and crow about how you spent X number of dollars to get a bully protection bill out so that they could bully gays and kids they disagree. Because they're citizen. They may have, a lot of people are having trouble connecting where they live to who they are. Some people have a little bit less problem because they're only going as far as their state and saying, I live in Texas there, by God, or South Carolina or North Carolina or Iowa or Idaho or Minnesota or Michigan or Maryland. No, you live in the United States of America. You are an American citizen, or you want to be. And the question I have for you is, when you see wrong done, what are you going to do about it? Coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River in Columbia for the last 2 hours, I have been the Tennessee Progressive, and you've been listening to Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style. This show will re-air over at the NetRoots Radio Network on Tuesday evening, beginning at midnight Eastern Time. It's available for archive here at the Coffee Party USA Radio Network site. We encourage you to look at the Coffee Party. We want you to join the Coffee Party and not become part of the discussion, become part of the solution, because we know that if we will but talk to one another, a solution is out there to be had. Thanks a lot for listening. Be careful this week, and we'll see you next time, okay? Bye-bye for now.